For quite some time on this program, I've been covering the reemergence of German fascism, and I say reemergence because, contrary to the official mythology, Germany was never effectively denazified at the end of World War II. Because of the anti-communist and anti-labor stance of Nazism, it was viewed with considerable favor by people in positions of power in the West, and so basically the Nazis were put right back in power in the Federal Republic of Germany behind a democratic facade. And again, I don't want to appear to be anti-German as a result of these statements, but that's simply a fact. And I think that much of the blame for the failure of denazification, as well as a significant amount of the blame for the Third Reich to begin with, falls with those elements in the United States that essentially backed Hitler. And they saw to it that the Nazis were put right back in power in the supposedly denazified Federal Republic of Germany. As we prepare to move into a new century, there has been a thoughtful look at the current state of political reality in Germany that has been that look has been taken by the Searchlight magazine. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, its opposite ideological number. Similar names, dramatically different ideological perspectives. You can reach the Searchlight at 37B, as in boy, New Cavendish Street, C-A-V-E-N-D-I-S-H. That's at London, W1M8JR, London, William 1 Mary 8 Jolly Roger, ISSN 0262-4591. The email for Searchlight is editor at s-light.demon.co.uk. Their website is s-light.demon.co.uk. Phone 0207-284-4040. Fax 0207-284-4410. And what we're going to do now is to take a look at a number of different articles from the Searchlight magazine's issue of September of 1999, all dealing with the state of reality in the Federal Republic of Germany, the state of political reality in the Federal Republic of Germany as we prepare to go into the next century. We're going to begin by taking a look at a Searchlight essay, Germany, Coming to Terms with Past and Future. It's by Martin Becker in Berlin, and it reads in part as follows. Since German reunification in 1990, the German army, the Bundeswehr, has been busy latching on to German militaristic traditions in an attempt to increase its popularity and restore its place in the center of society. On July 20th, the 55th anniversary of the attempt on Hitler's life, the army staged a public oath-taking ceremony for new recruits at the Berlin Bendler Block, once the headquarters of the Wehrmacht High Command. This very building, which today houses Germany's defense industry, was where Hitler and his generals planned their attempt to conquer the world. Public oath-taking, an integral element in Prussian and later fascist militarism, has made a dramatic reappearance since reunification. Such ceremonies remain, nevertheless, contentious, attracting counter-demonstrations. Although the venue was cordoned off on July 20th, anti-militarist demonstrators shouted slogans and greeted the spectacle with loud jeers and whistles. Note again this traditional public oath-taking ceremony, something that was very characteristic of Nazism in the Hitler period, is once again being adopted by the Bundeswehr, and the German army actually held this ceremony on the 55th anniversary of the attempt on Hitler's life at the building that once was the headquarters of the Wehrmacht High Command. I would note that here in the United States, there was no discussion of this, so this was in the immediate aftermath of the Balkans War, where the, quote, new, unquote, Germany allegedly helped to come to the rescue of the poor, oppressed Albanians and helped to turn back the nasty Serbs. In fact, the Balkans War was started by Germany with American backing. Continuing. By exploiting the memory of the July 1944 assassination attempt, the Bundeswehr gained public acceptance hitherto denied it. This was helped by the Bundeswehr's role in Kosovo, presented as an action against humanitarian catastrophe, unquote, and symbolizing the export of democracy, the Army's first wartime deployment since its inception in the mid-1950s. Television pictures of German troops marching into Kosovo, joyously welcomed by Albanians, were a big step forward for the hawks in the army, not least the Brussels-based General Klaus Naumann, who has long argued for combat deployment. By the way, Naumann, who was the Inspector General of the German Armed Forces, the equivalent of our Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in an address to his officers in the early 90s, said that now that Germany was reunified, basically the role of the Bundeswehr was to roll back the values not just of 1945, but of 1789, basically. They were going to roll back the values of liberty, equality, and fraternity, the values of the French Revolution. I would note that the Germans are observing the 250th anniversary of the birth of Wolfgang Goethe, arguably their most important cultural figure. As we looked at in For the Record segment 135, Goethe himself served as a spy in the period in which he taught students. He would spy on students and inform them to the authorities about what students were espousing the values of the French and American revolutions, both of which he opposed. I have noted that according to Professor Stauffer, one of the main fronts for German intelligence around the world, including the United States, is the Goethe Institute. Continuing. Preparations for the German army's involvement abroad had begun in the early 1990s during the term of Helmut Kohl's Christian Democrat, CDU, government, which was convinced by Naumann and others that public acceptance for the engagement of the Bundeswehr in armed conflicts had to be won. Quote, medical commandos, unquote, were sent to Somalia and Cambodia, followed by peace troops in Bosnia-Herzegovina, culminating eventually in the combat mode deployment in Kosovo. The fact that German troops were descending on Yugoslavia for the third time this century was lost on most Germans. Defense Minister Rudolf Scharping, speaking at the start of NATO's bombing campaign, jumped through hoops to draw a parallel between Milosevic and Hitler, arguing that the Germans, more than anyone else, had a duty to intervene. What he achieved was the first war ordered by the political left, Social Democrats and Greens, to be launched from German soil. By the way, I would take the assertion that they're the political left with a grain of salt. There's every indication that this, quote, center-left government is merely a front for the most reactionary and chauvinistic elements in Germany. I suspect that the Schroeder government is essentially a BND front. I'm absolutely convinced that Joschka Fischer, the German foreign minister and Green leader, is himself, in fact, BND. I suspect much the same thing of Schroeder. Again, the German government is this current German government, although ostensibly center-left, has actually proved to be one of the most nationalistic and chauvinistic in history. And I think it was specifically crafted in order to counteract negative world opinion to the groundswell of Nazism that appeared above ground in Germany in the immediate aftermath of reunification. And I think that this touchy-feely, allegedly cosmopolitan center-left government is basically a front to permit the Germans to enter into the same sort of geopolitical maneuvering that they've been engaging in for the last couple of hundred years. And I think the evidence argues strongly in that direction. German activities in the Balkans, where they literally precipitated the first major war in Europe since the Second World War, I think argues very eloquently for that interpretation. And note what Helmut Schroeder and the way he reacted to an exhibit that's going around Germany called Crimes of the Wehrmacht, which basically documents what serious scholars of World War II have known, which was that the actual regular German army, the Wehrmacht, was deeply involved with the Nazi atrocities. It was not just the SS and Gestapo. And bearing in mind, again, this last couple of sentences before we move to this discussion, and note in particular Helmut Schroeder's reaction to this particular exhibit. Defense Minister Rudolf Scharping, speaking at the start of NATO's bombing campaign, jumped through hoops to draw a parallel between Milosevic and Hitler, arguing that the Germans, more than anyone else, had a duty to intervene. What he achieved was the first war ordered by the political left, Social Democrats and Greens, to be launched from German soil. This role was only made possible in conjunction with NATO, but Prime Minister Tony Blair, among others, has done burgeoning German militarism a great service. By championing the war on behalf of humanitarianism and democracy, he has assisted the Bundeswehr's drive for legitimacy. Until now, the German army has a bad reputation at home. Nazi incidents have increased in recent years. Officers have held celebrations of Hitler's birthday, and traditions largely based on the Wehrmacht have been informally cultivated, illustrated by the number of military barracks still bearing names of Nazi generals. In particular, regular meetings have taken place between Bundeswehr officials and the association representing the bearers of the Knight's Cross, the most highly decorated and fanatical members of Hitler's armed forces. but the Army has not had everything its own way. In 1995, the Wehrmacht was open to unprecedented public scrutiny when the Hamburg Institute for Social Research launched a touring exhibition entitled The Crimes of the Wehrmacht, 1941 through 45. Earnest discussion questioned the hitherto official version of German history, according to which the Wehrmacht simply did its duty and blame for the Holocaust lay with the SS or Hitler alone. The exhibition sparked off controversy among war veterans. Some bore witness to the crimes documented. Others sought to defend the Wehrmacht's honor. The Bundeswehr naturally objected to the exhibition, but anyone expecting a clear statement on Wehrmacht crimes found the new Social Democratic Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder was to be sadly disappointed. Actually, let me begin this last sentence again. The Bundeswehr naturally objected to the exhibition, but anyone expecting a clear statement on Wehrmacht crimes from the new Social Democratic Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder was to be sadly disappointed. Schroeder told the French newspaper Le Monde, quote, "I cannot concede, as is being claimed, that an army in its majority committed such crimes," unquote. Again, that's indicative of the whole tone of this new, quote, center-left government, which I believe is nothing more than a BND front and has been put forward in order to permit more open German expansionism on the international scene. Again, the denazification of Germany is quite simply a political myth. It never happened. Skipping down in this story, we read, "The attempt to clean up German history, to dispose of the Holocaust and the Nazi war of aggression from 1939 to 1945, however, is as old as the Federal Republic itself, as the international integration of post-war Germany testifies. In 1949, when the Federal Republic was founded with the intention of tying it into the Western Alliance, a whole bunch of former Nazi functionaries and industrial leaders emerged to assume office and honors. For example, the control center of the government itself, the Chancellor's office, was set up by a former high-ranking Nazi functionary, Hans Globke. In the corridors of power walked the same criminals who had occupied them before 1945. Whether in industry, the banks, schools, universities, government departments, the police, or the army, the old thugs found themselves back in influential positions. The period of denazification had lasted only 3 years. The Cold War was underway, and the number one enemy of the Western world was the Soviet Union, guaranteeing the instant de facto rehabilitation of Nazi Party members. Reconstruction aid provided by the Marshall Plan facilitated Germany's rapid economic growth, and rising living standards and growing incomes drove home to Germans the advantages of the new system. The new state doctrine was against totalitarianism, whether socialist or national socialist. Fascist parties as well as the Communist Party were banned. But public perception was that the communist threat was more serious than the threat of a resurgence of Nazism. The old Nazis could live comfortably under the new system, provided they did not express themselves too openly in their former style. The CDU especially knew how to absorb old Nazis into the new system." And again, for veteran listeners to this program, that will appear anything but revelatory. But again, there may be newer listeners who are wondering what the heck I'm talking about. In the another section of the Searchlight, they call this From the Archives. And in the September 1999 issue, there's a story from 20 years ago, namely September of 1979, that exemplifies the reinstitution of Nazism in the Federal Republic of Germany behind a relatively thin democratic facade. This article from the Searchlight of September of 1979 was called West Germany, Who Watches the Watchers? And this deals with the Verfassungsschutz, or VS, which is the Department for the Protection of the Constitution. This basically is a domestic intelligence service that was set up ostensibly to see to it that Germany would be free of Nazism. In fact, however, the Verfassungsschutz has been staffed by people with direct connections to the Third Reich, and to a considerable extent, as we saw in Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, the Verfassungsschutz has actually served as something of a hatchery for German neo-Nazism. Considering the types of individuals who have generally staffed the Verfassungsschutz, this should come as no surprise. Reading now from the Archives section of the Searchlights in September 1999 issue, and this is called West Germany, Who Watches the Watchers? Of the Verfassungsschutz, we read, "It is commonly known that under the Berufsverbot law, West Germans may be excluded from public employment if they have any record of political activity of which the authorities disapprove. The agency entrusted with compiling the records necessary to implement such a policy is called the Verfassungsschutz, or VS, the Department for the Protection of the Constitution. Protests against this law have often focused on the fact that many of those responsible for enforcing it are ex-Nazis who use it as a means of conducting a witch hunt against the left. These claims have been given added weight in recent weeks, with disclosures concerning the political backgrounds of yet more VS officers. In Bremen, for example, one of the two men who oversee the computer coalition of data on left-wingers is Rudi Steiljes, S-T-E-I-L-J-E-S, known to his colleagues as SS Rudi. During the war, he was a member of the elite SS unit, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler. According to the German magazine Stern, Bremen's VS chief was himself a member of the Nazi Party. By the way, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler grew out of Adolf Hitler's personal guards. And again, in the for Faschingschutz, in charge with seeing to it that there was not, among other things, a return to Nazism. In fact, that very agency has itself been one of the many repositories for unreconstructed Nazism. Again, the denazification of Germany is quite simply a myth. More about the current state of German political reality. Turning once again to this issue, Germany coming to terms with past and future by Martin Becker. With the onset of economic problems in the early 1980s, speaking about the reemergence of German Nazism, with the onset of economic problems in the early 1980s, the Nazis started to gain attention by linking the small increases in unemployment with immigration and saw their chance to build a mass base. Although there were assaults on immigrants, Jewish institutions, and leftists, the new Nazis were relatively untouched by the police, who tended to come down more heavily against anti-fascists during Nazi demonstrations and anti-fascist counter-demonstrations. Without this state protection, the Nazi activists would probably have been crushed by anti-fascists. The Nazi groups that emerged at that time form the hard core of the Nazis in Germany today. And more about the gradual German shift with regard to their view of the Third Reich. This is something called the historian's debate, in which basically a group of mainstream German intellectuals in the mid-1980s revised the view of the Third Reich. Skipping down, a year later, the so-called historian's debate broke out, in which the internationally known historian Ernst Nolte questioned the uniqueness of the Holocaust and openly declared Nazi mass exterminations as nothing more than a reaction to the Soviet gulag. Skipping down, more about the gradual rehabilitation of the Third Reich and the revisionist history, which is changing the way Germans view the past. This year, at the presentation of the German Booksellers Peace Prize, the writer Martin Walser, W-A-L-S-E-R, was as enthusiastically received as Goldhagen before him. He, by the way, was the author of the book, Hitler's Willing Executioners. Continuing, what he said was rather different, however. To quote Walser, who wants to draw examination of German history to a close, quote, "When this past is laid before me every day in the media, I notice something awakes inside me that resists such continual harping on our shame. If I notice that something in me resists, I seek a motive for such parading of our shame, and I am almost happy to believe that I can discern that it is no longer the remembrance, the not daring to forget, which informs the motive, but the twisting of our shame to suit present-day purposes." The backdrop for these remarks is formed by two major current issues: the reparation payments of German industry and banks to forced laborers from the Nazi era, and the erection of a Holocaust memorial a mere 55 years after the event in the center of Berlin. Both projects are being supported by the majority of the political class in Germany, but only because of their bearing on Germany's image abroad and on profit and power. It is militaristic displays of the Bundeswehr, however, which signal the extent to which Germany has failed to come to terms with its past, but is intent on coming to terms with its future. I would note that Martin Walser was being awarded a peace prize by the German book trade when he made that speech, and that he was introduced by the German cultural minister under Gerhard Schroeder, who was a fellow named Michael Naumann, who was headed up by the Nazi-linked von Holtzbrinck firm to head up Henry Holton Company, one of the American publishers controlled by von Holtzbrinck. That discussed in the pair of half-hour segments entitled German Corporate Control of American Publishing. And apparently the new center-left government is once again making anti-Semitism fashionable in Germany, although this is simply portrayed as an attempt to balance the view of the German past. Another article from the same issue of Searchlight is called Anti-Semitism in Germany Alive and Kicking. It's from Zave Wolf in Berlin. Last October, the well-known author Martin Walser delivered an anti-Semitic speech at the presentation of the German Booksellers Peace Prize and caught the mood of many Germans. It was, he suggested, time to bring remembrance of the Holocaust to an end. Even while he spoke, the audience rose to its feet, applauding, feeling itself liberated at last. While Ignaz Bubis, leader of the Central Council of German Jews and an Auschwitz survivor, sank deeper into his chair, stunned at both the speech and the audience's reaction. The event encapsulates the situation of Germany's 80,000 Jews who stand all but alone in the face of anti-Semitism today. Very few non-Jewish intellectuals protested at Walser's speech. Indeed, Germany's leading weekly, Der Spiegel, published an analysis of Walser's theme that was itself anti-Semitic. 10 years after reunification, Germany seems to be awaiting a new wave of anti-Semitism like that at the beginning of the 90s, when countless attacks on Jews took place alongside the racist violence against foreigners and refugees. The targets were not only the living, but also memorials to the victims of National Socialism and Jewish cemeteries. And after discussion of the desecration and bombing of the graves of various German Jewish leaders, the author goes on, those responsible were Berlin Nazis with links to the wanted Nazi terrorist Eckhard Weil, who have previously been involved in anti-Jewish outrages. The police reached the same conclusion, but abandoned their investigation because the suspects appeared to have alibis. And skipping down of the, quote, new, unquote, center-left government, instead of addressing itself to the brutal realities of German history, the new Social Democratic Green government speaks directly to these elitists, who now describe themselves as the, quote, new center, unquote, an indication of the shift to the right. The historical sensitivity of many of those who created and support this government is abysmal. And still more on the, quote, center-left government, unquote. This is from an article entitled Germany's Far Right. It's authored by Tammy Wild in Berlin. And skipping down about the reaction of the new center-left government to resurgent Nazi terror in Germany, this terrorist aspect of the Nazi scene is more or less continuously played down by the state, a fact that has not changed since the election of the so-called red-green government, yet there is increasing evidence that part of the NPD's base is moving towards militant action. The NPD, one of the top German Nazi groups. And I would add that in this next and concluding article in this section, we're going to see how the handling of German Nazism by the center-left government is very similar to the psychobabble and the downplaying of the onset of fascism in the United States by the authorities here in the United States. In fact, in mid-1999, we've been treated to a series of Nazi killers. Mr. Smith went off on July 4th, associated with the World Church of the Creator. We have Buford Furrow with documented connections to the Aryan Nations going off and killing a Filipino-American mailman and shooting some Jewish children at a community center. And, of course, we have those two little Nazi brats, Klebold and Harris, who went off at Columbine High School in conjunction with others who have yet to be brought to heel. And yet we've been told that these people are lone nuts or that they played too many computer games. The downplaying of the onset of fascism in the United States, which, by the way, I discussed at considerable length in a recent pair of half-hour segments entitled Caution, Lone Nuts at Work, is very similar to the way Nazi crimes in Germany are being downplayed by the German authorities as well. I think both the United States and Germany are proceeding down a similar path, namely fascism, and the authorities in both countries are reacting in a very similar fashion, downplaying the work of organized Nazi and fascist treachery as the manifestation of psychopathology. This is an article about Nazi rock music called Music That Maims. It's co-authored by Eike Wunderlich and Hans Vollrab in Germany, and it reads in part as follows. Helmut Kohl became chancellor in 1983, intent on introducing spiritual and moral changes amounting to the restoration of traditional Prussian values. Skipping down, this provided fertile ground for fascism. Nazi ideas no longer carry any stigma among the young. So it is no surprise that the German rock band Rammstein, whose latest video features extracts from Leni Riefenstahl's notorious Nazi propaganda film Olympiad 1936, has rocketed into the top 10. By the way, he was one of Harrison Klebold's. Rammstein was one of Harrison Klebold's influences as well. Continuing, Guben, a small town near the Polish border, was the scene in February of the kind of crime that occurs daily in Germany when a gang of 15 youngsters pursued Omar Ben Nui, an Algerian. The manhunt, coordinated over mobile phones, culminated in his death. The identities of those responsible were known, and they had even attended a council course for the social rehabilitation of, quote, young right-wing extremists, unquote. Their social worker described them as, quote, fun fascists, unquote, who gained a sense of their own worth through contact with skinheads and were, quote, communicative and constructive, unquote, though, quote, enormously insecure and easily led, unquote. Note this, that the German authorities are dismissing the reemergence of fascism in their own country with the same sort of psychobabble that Americans are dismissing the emergence of fascism in this country. Oh, it's just a bunch of kids who are communicative and constructive but insecure and easily led, or they've watched too many computer games, etc., etc. Continuing with this article, this sums up the official attitude to Nazi youth. Public discussion of fascist attitudes consists of meaningless jargon portraying perpetrators as victims and young fascists as the, quote, losers in the modernization process. Political issues are hurriedly blanked out, and the real problems neatly filed away under handy headings such as youth gangs and isolated actions caused by drink, unquote. The government throws millions of marks at social projects based on ideas originally designed to tackle drug abuse that treat young people as individual clients who should be, quote, accepted, unquote, and taken seriously, unquote. Fears, needs, and worries are, quote, understood, unquote, and interests supported to strengthen feelings of self-esteem. Emphasis shifts to violence prevention and social reintegration, unquote. The results are sobering. A study of a Leipzig youth center showed how the readiness of social workers to, quote, accept their clients, unquote, led to a Nazi takeover, with social workers helping to organize their charges' participation in the Nazi demonstration in Munich in the spring of 1997. The main result of these cozy arrangements appears to be a logistically generous and legally secure base for ongoing Nazi organization. Nazis can hold their Kameradschaft meetings, the Kameradschaft evenings, their bands have space to practice, and thugs can plot racist violence without hindrance. Widespread public acceptance of racism, growing nationalism, the removal of former taboos about Nazism, and the benevolence of the authorities partially account for the almost continuous rise of fascism among youth. Today, at least 100,000 are involved. Swaths of German youngsters living outside the cities are a Nazi party in waiting. Again, note the similarity with which the rise of Nazism in Germany is being treated to the way that the rise of fascism in the United States is being treated here. Witness the pair of recently recorded half-hour segments, Caution, Lone Nuts at Work. Those, by the way, are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There's a list of and description of the tapes available from Spitfire and on the Spitfire website, which is equipped with real audio. That's at spitfirelist.com. One word, SPITFIRELIST.com. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.